Hello, young and profiters. Today, we are playing a Yap Classic, my interview with internet marketing mogul Paul Getter. Paul is a serial entrepreneur and CEO of the Internet Marketing Nerds. He has spent over $1 billion in ad campaigns for his clients and has helped scale numerous businesses to 8 figures a year. He's worked with A-list clients like Tai Lopez, Grant Cardone, Lewis House, and Tim Story. In this episode, Paul reveals his top tips for building a strong personal brand online and his golden rule for paid advertising campaigns. We also talk about how to foster meaningful relationships on social media, how to use forms to qualify our leads, and why you should prioritize relationships over revenue. This interview is packed with evergreen gems on all things internet marketing, so I think you guys are gonna love it. All right, let's get into it. Enjoy my conversation with Paul Getter. Hey, Paul, welcome to Young and Profiting Podcast.
Thank you very much, Holla. How did I get on Young and Profiting? I'm too old to be on Young and Profiting, but thank you very much for having me here.
We actually have listeners of all ages, and I tend to interview people who are older than me and older than our listeners because you guys have the wisdom to share. And so there's no age limit on Young and Profiting Podcast. Don't worry about it.
good, because I've been on Old and Profiting Podcast before, but this is the first time on Young and Profiting Podcast. So thank you for the invitation.
Of course. Let's talk about everything marketing. So you are like a paid advertising guru, right? We're both in the marketing world, so we have plenty to talk about. I think we're going to jive really well together. And so you've worked with super high profile guests like Grant Cardone, Tai Lopez, Gary Vee. I mean, it's incredible, you know, who you've had on your list of clients. And so we're going to get into that, how to network and how to reach those high profile people. But first, I want to talk about your come up story. You actually went to school and you had a degree in theology. So tell us about that and how you went from theology to marketing without any formal training.
Okay, yeah. So again, thank you very much for having me here, Holla. It's amazing to connect with you and your audience. So yeah, I got a degree in theology. And for those that don't know what theology is, it's study of God. I went to Bible college and often called seminary. And one of the things that I quickly learned after graduating with a degree in theology, that it wasn't a very marketable degree. You fill out an application, say you got a degree in theology. People are like, okay, I don't know if you're going to work for us, you know, and things like that. I remember filling out an application one time. Someone said, theology, isn't that the study of rocks? I'm like, no, that's geology. So I brought up, my father was a minister, and really, if someone gets a degree in theology, they're not necessarily going to school to figure out how to make money. It's more of a personal development type of path. But quickly after graduating with a degree in theology, I realized, hey, it's not very marketable. And then I kind of found myself, I was always involved in tech or nerdy type stuff. And so I just kind of begin to explore. At this time, it was more of kind of like building websites and search engine optimization and things like that.
Yeah. And so I think Facebook is like your main platform, or at least used to be. We'll get into maybe what you're using today. But you first got onto it because you created a Facebook page for your church. Tell us how you did that and how that opened your eyes to the possibilities of what Facebook could do.
Yeah, so you do amazing research. How do you know these details about me?
You know what? We don't screw around here at Young and Profiting Podcast.
Right, yeah. I mean, you found the great details. So yeah, one of my friends was going off to college and they said, hey, you need to get on Facebook. And I remember at this time, Facebook was kind of like games. They had Farmville and silly things like that. And I was like, I don't need to get on that. That's just a waste of time. And eventually I caved in and got on Facebook, started a Facebook.
And what year was this?
It's like around 1870. No, I'm just kidding. I think it's probably around 2008 or so, 2008, 2009, somewhere around there. And so it was, Facebook was in its very beginning infancy stages. And again, the trend then was these micro games inside of the platform, and you could play games endlessly. And it was less socializing, more about playing games. But I eventually caved in, got on Facebook and started playing around and building Facebook pages. And I noticed that a few businesses would have Facebook pages. And so I was like, I really didn't have a business at this time, but I thought, well, maybe set up a Facebook page for our church. And so I set up a Facebook page for our church and just, you know, the picture and a little bit of information and everything like that, and put a couple videos on there and stuff. And I remember a couple weeks later, I went to church and there was this new family there. And I asked them, I was like, where did you hear about us at? And they said, oh, we saw your Facebook page. And it was like a light bulb moment for me. I was like, whoa, okay, these are real people. They found out about us from Facebook. They showed up. And it was then I realized, okay, Facebook could be a platform that, if used properly, could help out a lot of businesses. And so at that point, I began to kind of like dabble around and, you know, connect with friends that had businesses and say, hey, you know, you need to get on Facebook. And, you know, I saw a business opportunity at that point.
Yeah. So this is really interesting to me because I think it's important for my listeners to understand the need to take the opportunities in front of you. So for example, you were really into your church, you had a theology degree, and you connected the dots. You realized that, you know, hey, I can start this Facebook page. And then your passion for starting marketing and working on Facebook kind of outgrew your passion for theology, right? And so it's just so cool that you took that experience. And oftentimes people don't, like, they're too afraid to learn something new and just to like take on a new experience. And I feel like that's the only way you can really find your true passion is to actually take those experiences.
Yeah, I think, to better word it, you know, my passion in theology and church, my faith, my relationship for that, found a place where I could equally connect those. And as I mentioned, a degree in theology isn't very marketable from a monetary standpoint, and you don't do it for that reason. It's kind of like someone that has a degree in bird watching. Well, you may not make a whole lot of money in bird watching, but if you built a course or training or something like that in bird watching, well, there is an opportunity. So it was a perfect fit where I could join the passion and a business, connect them together, and it could grow from there.
Totally. So let's talk about organic reach. When you first started on Facebook, it was like the wild, wild west, huge organic reach. I mean, LinkedIn was kind of like that a couple years ago. But like, tell us about Facebook. What was the organic reach like when you were first on it? And why does that happen? Why do platforms lose organic reach over time?
Yeah, so it seems like every platform starts out like that. During that initial phase when the organic reach was very high, you could build Facebook pages. You know, we would build Facebook pages from zero to a million in a month, maybe 2 months. And again, the organic reach was incredible. I remember when things would go viral, I had a small page, which the page that I had that, again, I started building as like hobbies for fun. The name of the page was called I Love Jesus. And I posted something on there. It only had 200,000 likes on it, but I would post something on there and it would always get at least 200,000, 300,000 likes. And I remember as it grew, it would get 200,000, 300,000 shares on post. So you could imagine how the organic reach was completely different back then. And then, as you know, things just slowly, slowly started to go down. And the reason why that happens is because of the audience on a social media platform. It grows. And so they want to have a more intelligent timeline. So, you know, if you're following 5,000 people, well, it's not necessarily the best timeline that all 5,000 people, their content shows up. So they begin to throttle the engagement, and the algorithm shows you what you engage with the most because they feel like that's more effective. So as a platform grows for you to see and interact with the stuff that is most important for you, they prioritize, you know, content based upon your engagement and what's relevant to you at that moment versus a true just organic reach.
Got it. So it's more like they keep changing their algorithm to make it more personal to you. And then wouldn't you say also like more content creators, more competition, like as people find out something's getting big organic reach, all the content creators go flock there. And then it's just more competition too.
Yeah.
Right?
So it is. It's just the more people that get onto the platform, the more that they have to change that algorithm to meet what you want to see or what they think. And that's why people oftentimes hate algorithms. I call them algorithm monsters, is because they're like, well, I'm not really seeing what I want to see, or I'm posting. Most of the times the people that complain about the algorithm is the content creators, because their content isn't being seen by as many people they think should be seen. And so, yeah, it puts you in a position where content and what you do and the quality is more important than just putting out, you know, silly, meaningless memes or something like that.
Totally. So you've interviewed a lot of people that I've interviewed before. I'm sure there's so much overlap in terms of the people who you've had as a client and who I've interviewed. And Tai Lopez was actually your first big break. How did you end up landing that big client? And what is your advice in terms of reaching really high level people in terms of your networking?
Yeah, so that's a great question. A lot of times, as far as notable individuals, Tai Lopez was kind of one of the big names that I connected with initially. But prior to that, I think that there was a lot of big wins. You know, it's kind of like the iceberg theory. Like, okay, there was a lot going on here before I started working with Tai Lopez. And of course, Tai Lopez, when I first started working with him, this was, you know, 6 years ago or so. You know, he was less prominent than he is now, still a very successful individual and doing big stuff. But I had a lot of big wins before that, where I had proven my skill and I was getting results for other clients. And really, how did it happen? It was a word of mouth referral. It's my understanding. I don't know all the details to it, but somehow one of the clients that I was working with was at the barber shop talking to the barber, and, you know, just regular conversation was going on. How's business going? He's like, oh, great. You know, things are really growing. I'm working with this guy over in Florida and he's been doing this. And, you know, this guy was a client of mine and he was talking to the barber about it. And that was the extent of the conversation. Well, the next person in the barber seat was Tai Lopez. It was either Tai Lopez or someone on his team. They got talking, and next thing you know, I'm getting a phone call. And I didn't know who Tai Lopez was, and it was kind of a different field of work that I was doing. Again, at this point, I was helping people grow their social media, grow their Facebook page, help monetize their presence and things like that. And so I got a phone call from a guy. Hey, you know, I heard you were working with so-and-so. Tell us a little bit more about what you're doing. And I'm just answering questions, just telling him what I'm doing and stuff. And he told me, well, this is what we're doing. And I pulled up their profile, started looking at it. I'm like, oh, yeah, I can cut your costs probably by 80, 90%. And, you know, and it wasn't anything that I just thought, yeah, I could do that. They're doing it wrong. That was one of the things that I learned really quickly, is a lot of people were doing marketing in the early days, that they were running ads, but there was no real system, or Facebook had it where you could just like click a button, launch an ad, and it was going. So a lot of people would just do that automatic ad population. Well, it wasn't the best way to do it. And so I told him, yeah, I can get your costs 80, 90% down. And the call ended, and about 15, 20 minutes later, the individual told me, they said, hey, my brother Tai wants to know if you could fly out to California tomorrow and have a conversation with us. I'm like, oh, this is strange. You want to fly me out there tomorrow? And I was like, oh, yeah, okay, sounds good. And so next thing you know, I'm sitting in Ty's office talking with him. That was his brother, Ben, that I initially had the conversation with. And I just had my little iPad there. I'm like, yeah, so this is what you should do. This is what you're doing. And I remember at the end of the conversation, Ty was like, hey, Paul, you know what? I'm pretty sharp at marketing. I could probably figure out how you're doing this, but I don't want to waste my time. I want to hire you. When can you start? And I was like, well, as soon as I go back to the hotel, I can set up the ads. And so went back to the hotel, set up the ads. And I remember an hour or two later, I took a screenshot and showed them, okay, this is what you were doing. This is what you're doing now. And, you know, cost per click had dropped 90% using the method that I was using. And he's like, okay, let's go. So that was kind
of how I got
connected with Ty Lopez.
Cool. Well, it goes to show the importance of relationships, right? You got it through a client referral, and making a good impression on everyone is so important. And you actually often say relationships over revenue, right? So what does that mean exactly?
Yeah. So here's the thing is a lot of times people, they in business, and I think maybe it's a natural tendency is to, how can I say it? Just chase the money. You know, what can I do to make money? And that's how we try to conceptualize a business, is how to make money. And I think in the infancy stages of a business, that is like, okay, what can I do to pay the bills? What can I do to make money? And so you're trying everything. But when you reverse it and you say, how can I help people? How can I build relationships? Granted, that is a longer process. And I've done the reverse, where it's like, what can I do to make money? And it's like, being an affiliate or doing, ClickBank and things like that. And you make money, but you're not really helping. You're just making money. And so the thing about making quick money is it disappears as quickly as it comes. But when you build relationships with people and you authentically want to help people, then that goes so much further. It lasts longer. And I had a lot of my coaching students or clients during all of this craziness that we experienced in 2020 reach out to me, Paul, what do I do? What do I do? You know, just kind of nervous and apprehensive. And I just told them, like, help people. You might have to help people in a different way now, but if you help people, you will always be in business and the money will come from there.
Yeah, I completely agree. And it's one of the best ways to like even get a mentor is to just offer help and to help people and to just always be of value and provide service. So I totally agree there. Do you have any networking hacks or tips or a cool networking story that you can share with us in terms of like a scrappy way that you got to meet someone or get somebody, like get your foot in the door in terms of a client?
Yeah, so a couple different things. Obviously, when it comes to social media, you're one DM away from anybody you want to connect with, really. I mean, that's, you can meet anybody. It just takes some persistency. So I do this, and people oftentimes find this peculiar that I would do this, but I will personally message 20, 30 people a day, people that I want to connect with, build relationship, or just someone doing cool stuff. And so I do that. I personally send messages to them, tell them, you know, I like their content. They're doing amazing things, and leave it at that. I don't go for like, hey, I want to work with you. I just build a relationship. And then the ask might come later down the road. It might be a week. It might be a month. Who knows? But I just build relationships. I comment on their content. I build a relationship with them on social media. And, you know, I've had amazing people respond to messages that I've sent them. And so that's a great way to build a relationship. A lot of times when it comes to connecting with higher profile people, whether it's A-list celebrities or big name influencers, sometimes it's easier to connect with someone that is connected to them first versus connecting with them directly. So you kind of watch, you know, they have friends, they have people, maybe it's that person that is always commenting on their posts and getting a response, or you just kind of research and look who's connected to them, because it's often difficult to get connected to that person that you really want to get connected to. But if you connect with people that are connected to them, then it can naturally open up to building a relationship with them. But a great way, and I've done this, and I still do this, is you find that big influencer. Number one, you have to have a skill that is of value to help them. You got to be able to add value to their situation. But you just connect with them and say, let's say, for example, you're a graphic designer. Reach out to them and say, hey, you know, I would love to help you out on your graphic design. Is it okay if I make you, you know, 10 images, no charge, help you out? Maybe your video editor, whatever your skill set is. So volunteer that for free. And then what that does is that opens the door for a conversation to get started. If your skills are good, it will just go further from there.
Let's hold that thought and take a quick break with our sponsors. Hey, Yap Fam. Starting my LinkedIn Secrets Masterclass was one of the best things I've ever done for my business. I didn't have to waste time figuring out all the nuts and bolts of setting up a website that had everything I needed, like a way to buy my course, subscription offerings, chat functionality, and so on, because it was super easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Whether you're selling your first product, finally taking your side hustle full time, or making $500,000 from your masterclass like me. And it doesn't matter if you're selling digital products or vegan cosmetics, Shopify helps you sell everywhere, from their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system. Shopify's got you covered as you scale. Stop those online window shoppers in their tracks and turn them into loyal customers with the internet's best converting checkout. I'm talking 36% better on average compared to other options out there. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S., from huge shoe brands like Allbirds to vegan cosmetic brands like Thrive Cosmetics. Actually, back on episode 253, I interviewed the CEO and founder of Thrive Cosmetics, Carissa Bodnar, and she told me about how she set up her store with Shopify and it was so plug and play. Her store exploded right away. Even for a makeup artist type girl with no coding skills, it was easy for her to open up a shop and start her dream job as an entrepreneur. That was nearly a decade ago, and now it's even easier to sell more with less thanks to AI tools like Shopify Magic. And you never have to worry about figuring it out on your own. Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way, so you can focus on the important stuff, the stuff you like to do. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/profiting, and that's all lowercase. If you want to start that side hustle you've always dreamed of, if you want to start that business you can't stop thinking about, if you have a great idea, what are you waiting for? Start your store on Shopify. Go to shopify.com/profiting now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Again, that's shopify.com/profiting. Shopify.com/profiting for a $1 per month trial period. Again, that's shopify.com/profiting. Yeah, I love that advice. And I think that it's such an easy thing for people to do, especially like if you're in college or something like that, and you're looking for a mentor or somebody you can intern for. I think that's the way to go, is to just use whatever skills you have and offer them something for free and see if that gets them talking to you. So totally agree there.
Yeah, it's building relationship. It's helping them. And again, number one, your skills have to be good, because if you're doing graphic designs or whatever it is and it's not good, then it doesn't. Then
you know, exactly. They're just going to be like, well, I don't want you to work for me.
No, that's okay.
Yeah, hone your skills first. I totally agree. Totally agree. So let's talk about personal branding. So at some point you were behind the scenes. And then you decided that you wanted to kind of come out and really start your personal brand. So what triggered you wanting to start your personal brand? And then how did that influence your business later on?
Yeah. So when it comes to personal branding, I often look back and think, man, I wish I would have started this sooner. But I was kind of content with just helping other people build their brands, helping other businesses. And it wasn't until individuals like Ty Lopez would kind of like pull me out and say, hey, you know, this is a guy that's been helping me. I've been working with him, invite me to speak at masterminds and conferences and stuff. And so it's just kind of, you know, if it wasn't for individuals like that pulling me out and saying, hey, he's been helping me on this, and I probably would have been satisfied just staying behind the scenes. But I think you do have to look at sometimes people, they are hesitant about building their own personal brand because they don't want to come across as arrogant or, you know, just me and stuff. But if you can sincerely help people, then all you're doing when it comes to building a personal brand is getting people's attention on you, so you can show them how you can help people. So when it comes to building a personal brand, there's so much benefit of doing that, because it is, when you build a personal brand, whatever you connect yourself to, it will grow. So it's not just about a job or being employed by someone else, but you are building in your own personal brand. Gives you a few things. It gives you longevity. So a brand, whether it's personal or business brand, gives you longevity. It gives you a longer lifespan in that. Then it gives you loyalty. People are loyal to brands. They connect with personal brands and business brands. So loyalty. And then it gives you legacy. When everything's done and you fold up the chapter and you want to move on, you can pass on a brand, a personal brand or a business brand, on to somebody else that can carry it on. So those are kind of like the three L's of personal branding: loyalty, legacy, and longevity. So yeah, like Shaq, I was just walking through the mall the other day and I see posters and cutouts of Shaq. And he's one of these guys that he was an athlete. Everybody knew him as an athlete. But now he is a huge personal brand. If he wants to endorse General Car Insurance, he's the face of that. If he wants to do Frosted Flakes, he's the face of that. Headphones, he's the face of that. Just so many different things. So if you have a good, strong personal brand, you're not limited to just marketing or just, you know, one specific field, but whatever you attach yourself to, people want to be connected to it also.
Yeah, I totally get that. Totally agree. I often call it a transferable asset. So no matter where you go, you can go bring your personal brand. And for me, like, I grew my personal brand on LinkedIn and I've never felt more secure, like in terms of job security, because it's like everybody just wants to talk to you, network with you. There's just so many opportunities. So I would encourage everyone to start building their online personal brand.
Attention,
like, you
is
have
currency.
One, whether you like it or not. Yeah, exactly. Okay, so how much money would you say that you've spent over the years in paid ads, like your clients' budgets and things like that? Like, what would you say?
Yeah, so I can tell you this. It has been over $1 billion that we have, not obviously not my money, but clients and, you know, different companies that we have worked with. You know, we've done campaigns where people are spending tens of millions of dollars a month on ads. We've worked with companies that spend $100 million in a few months on ads. So yeah, over 10 years, a few big clients, it adds up really quickly.
Wow. So over $1 billion in ads. What pops in my mind, you know, as a marketer too, is experimentation. Like, man, you've done a lot of experimentation over the years if you had $1 billion that you've been running ads on. So like, when it comes to like all the learnings that you've done, you've ran so many campaigns, like what are the golden rules in terms of paid ads right now? Is there anything, like, I know the platforms keep changing, the level of targeting keeps getting more micro, but like, what are the red threads that you see, like, over the years? You've been doing it for a decade.
Great question. So this is something, I think it's kind of the 101 of marketing, but people, they think that it doesn't apply when it comes to digital marketing. A catchphrase or a word that people use all the time is disruptive. So it has to be disruptive. So here's the challenge about being disruptive in online marketing. And I've seen this, and I've been kind of like the catalyst of trends that happen on social media and running ads. So this is what happens, is a marketer has a cool idea or a new style or something that they start running an ad and it's disruptive. And it all of a sudden, man, this is doing amazing, because maybe it's the color, the style, the types of videos, the format, all of these things. You know, you're always tweaking because you want people, when they're scrolling, it's like, whoa, that catches my attention.
Stop the scroll, right?
Yeah, stop the scroll. And so that's the challenge on social media, is you want to stop the scroll. So as someone that is innovating and really pushing the envelope on stuff, that you always want to be testing what catches people's attention. So what happens is you put together something and you do it and it starts working. You're like, oh man, amazing. This is disruptive. This is getting a great click-through rate. Awesome results. Then other marketers, they start seeing it like, whoa, man, that's doing awesome. That really caught my attention. And so guess what they do? Is they start doing the same thing. Yeah, and they start to copy it. And next thing you know, what you were doing 6 months ago that was disruptive, you've got 1,000 other marketers that are doing the exact same thing. So it's no longer disruptive. It's camouflaged into everybody else's ads. So that's the challenge, is you always have to do. So I've seen this, like, there used to be a time when, and I almost laugh about this, but people would run ads where they would have a red outline on their ad, on the picture. There was a red outline and then there was a green outline. So it was like, okay, this would make it stand out more. And then everybody started doing red outlines in it. And then it was just like, it became annoying to people. It stopped catching their attention and it started annoying them. And everybody stopped doing that. But then it goes into a different trend. But now I've seen recently, and, you know, like 5 years later after a trend, people are doing something that was popular 5 years ago because people stopped doing it. So it's kind of one of those things that you always have to look at what other people are doing and I guess be a contrarian and don't do that.
That's really good advice. And I think that it's advice that is evergreen. You know, we can use it now and 10 years from now, it's still true. And I totally agree. You need to make sure your stuff stands out if you want to, you know, get any attention on social media, whether that's organic or paid. How about data tracking? Like you're in this space, you've probably targeted on a million different things. Is there things that we just, like, little known ways that our data is being tracked that you can talk about?
Yeah. So here's the thing. I remember when my old buddy Mark Zuckerberg was before Congress and they were questioning him about how the data is used and everything like this. What you have to understand is that Facebook is just one point where data is collected. And so he can answer questions like, hey, does Facebook do this? And he's like, no, we don't do that. And the answer is right, they don't do that, but they're partnered with 1,000 other companies that do that. And so Facebook isn't doing it, but this other company that they're partnered with is doing it. So, you know, it becomes a slippery slope. So data is being tracked every, and it's not just online. It's when you go to Walgreens, you got your little Walgreens card. Data is being tracked about you. You ever find it interesting when you go to Walgreens and they print out your receipt and then there's coupons that you receive that are exactly aligned with your spending history? It's because Walgreens is tracking. If you go to a car dealership, you buy a car. When you sign those documents, you're being tracked. Your information is being given to them, and car dealerships, it's more than just selling cars for them, but they are selling information about you. So everything that you do in one level or another, it is being tracked. So, you know, for a consumer, that might be something that is, it's startling to understand that, you know, there's probably 50,000 or more attributes about you, whether it's your, you know, your age, your income level, your spending habits, the sites that you go to. There's so many variables. Like, we could set up an ad that would say, hey, I want to target a single man that lives in Los Angeles, that has a bachelor's degree, that makes over $100,000, that lives in this zip code, that likes cats. Matter of fact, that likes Siamese cats. And anyways, we could set up an ad that would target a person on that level. So for a consumer, that's something that would make them a little bit nervous. But for a marketer, we're like, yeah, you know, that's great. So it's a double-edged sword.
Yeah. So is there any sort of, like, line that you have in terms of ethics and paid ads and personalization and targeting? Like, is there anything that you're like, we can't go there? Or do you feel like, you know, sky's the limit when it comes to data tracking and targeting? And what are your thoughts on that? Is there any, like, kind of, like, line in the sand that you draw?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think that, and Facebook does have policies in place that does not permit you to target people on certain attributes, you know, gender, ethnicity, things of that nature. So I think that those are good guidelines to follow, that you're not going to be targeting people based on specific, the personal details. So yeah, there is a line. Obviously, marketers always find a way around these policies. But again, Facebook finds out about it. They shut them down and things. So a lot of times the people that complain about the policies that Facebook or the other ad platforms have is because they're trying to run that gray line. They're trying to do it the easier way versus put in extra work, build a personal brand, work hard. They're trying to get the quick money. So policies that are put in place are normally for the good, and they keep good marketers good and keep the bad marketers out of the industry.
Yeah. Thanks so much for sharing that. So paid ads are, you know, the front end of a campaign, right? And then what happens after that? So a lot of people who listen to the show, they're not marketers, so they don't know anything about funnels and things like that. So can you explain what a funnel is and maybe some of the core components of a funnel?
Yeah, so basically it's a journey. It's a path that you take. And sometimes the path might happen in, you know, immediately on your initial online visit. You connect with an ad and you go through a path very quickly. Other times the journey, it might be a day, a week, a month, a year, but that's basically what it is. It's a path, and the path might start out, you see that cool ad, someone talking about something that resonates with you. And so it might be an ad. I'll use myself as an example. Before this call, I was actually making video ads. And so I start out by calling out the person. Hey, are you a coach? You're a consultant? Are you an entrepreneur wanting to take your business to the next level? Well, I want to talk to you about. And so I'm calling out the individual with an ad. They click on that ad and it takes them to a landing page or the front end of my funnel. And so that's going to be a page that is, you know, has a hook, a headline talking to them about, hey, maybe you're struggling. A lot of times we hit the problems that they're having. Are you having a problem getting applications for your high ticket sales? Well, we have the answer for it. Matter of fact, we use a simple outline here, and it's answering questions. I got my notebook here that was doing it. It's a few questions like, who is the person? What is their problem? How we can solve that problem? And so we're asking them questions in this, and we show them the solution. So initially, they might enter their name, their email, phone number, and they're going to be put into a list, and they might be pushed to fill out an application to set up a call. There might be an initial, we call it a tripwire, where they would buy something, a low ticket entry. Again, sometimes people try to go for the big sale quick and it doesn't always work. We've seen individuals that we work with that they're spending a lot of money on trying to sell, let's say, for example, a webinar where the price is $1,000 and they're just not making any money. But we'll put something in the front. Again, we call it a tripwire, where it's $7, $20, and it just, so we get people to come in here and buy something, you know, a micro commitment. And then if they like that content, a day later, 2 days later, however long it might take, they'll go to a webinar, they'll watch this, and then they'll later make a $1,000 purchase. And then those people that go into a $1,000 purchase, maybe they want to go faster, maybe they want some one-on-one attention, maybe they want personal customized coaching. They can set up a call where they'll get on a discovery call or a strategy call and talk to a specialist about how we can help them. And then they're offered coaching programs, stuff of high tickets. But it's a journey. It's kind of like, you know, initially get connected, building that relationship, and then, okay, we have this, and then you take them. And again, depending on the product, the offer, it might be something that it goes very quickly, or typically the higher the price of it, the longer it's going to take for them to go from point A to Z. But it's a journey. We call it a funnel because, you know, funnels shaped like this, and you have people come in at the top and then it just slowly goes down. And then, you know, you less likely the people are going to come down to here, but the people that come down here, those are going to be the higher value people. So that's the world of funnels.
Yeah, that's an excellent explanation. And I've never really heard of a tripwire. I never heard of that concept. I've heard about people giving like free ebooks and stuff like that. But I love what you said about offering something like a micro commitment. That's really smart. So really cool stuff there. And then the purpose of the form is to better qualify your leads, right? So that you can ask specific questions and maybe target them more. So like, what's the purpose of the form?
Yeah. So when you're having someone fill out an application, I'll give you an example of a funnel that we have in our world. Is it would be a $7, I have a book or an audio book talking to people about marketing. And, you know, I hit all the pain points. Hey, I'm going to teach you how to do this, this, and this. And it's $7 for that. Well, then as they go to check out, there's going to be a little box that says, hey, for $27 more, I'm going to throw in all of these PDFs and all of this awesome stuff that is just, you know, they're going to look at that like, $27, is that all? And they're going to feel just, they have to click that button because the value, it's just an irresistible offer. So for $27, they get that. And then a person is going to go after that. They might say, hey, you know, we've got this one-time offer for you that I'm going to teach you how, you know, the secrets of, let's say, for example, Instagram growth, growing your following. Normally, this is $300, but if you act now, I'm going to give it to you for $99. And it's a nice video explaining to them the offer. And again, this is before they even click the final checkout button. They're going to get that. And then that kind of concludes if they say yes or no on that. Maybe they say no to it. We'll come back and say, hey, you know, how about we break it up into three payments of $40 for you? Instead of one time $99, we'll break it up into three. And then we try to get them to say yes again. If they say no, we want to go try to get them to say yes again. And so again, there's kind of a little work involved there. Then they check out, they're done. And after they check out, the thank you page is a video saying, hey, you know, you're a coach, you're a consultant, you have a business, maybe you want to take it to the next level. This is what we're offering. And it's a nice video talking to them about how we might be able to help them with their coaching, consulting business. If you're interested, there's an application below that you can fill out and set up a complimentary 30-minute strategy session with one of our experts. So they fill out this application. And yeah, the application asks them qualifying questions. Code, whenever you see free strategy session, that is code for sales call. Just, you know, plain and simple. Anytime you see that in people's bio, free strategy session, that means sales call. Granted, there's going to be a lot of value given in those strategy sessions where we pick apart what you're doing and give you value. But at the end of it, they're going to say, hey, you know, we offer a coaching program, a mentorship program, and, you know, this is what we offer, and you make the decision from there. I don't like high pressure, like, oh, you know, you got to buy. That's never a good way to work with someone. But the application, it's going to ask them qualifying questions to see if they would be a good fit. If they're one of those people, like I even ask on some of our applications, do you realize the importance of investing in yourself? And the answer number one that they can say is, I don't have any money and I think I should get everything for free. So we ask them that question. And then the second answer is, yes, I understand, but I'm on a limited budget. I can only invest between this amount and this amount of money. Then the third answer is going to be something like, I mean business, I'm a serious entrepreneur, and I understand the importance of really investing in myself. And so those are qualifying questions where if someone is saying, hey, I want everything for free, And people do fill out applications and say, I want everything for free. Chances are they're not going to be qualified for a coaching program that we would offer to them. So yeah, it's about the application is qualifying them.
We'll be right back after a quick break from our sponsors. Young and Profiters, we are all making money. But is your money hustling for you? Meaning, are you investing? Putting your savings in the bank is just doing you a total disservice. You got to beat inflation. I've been investing heavily for years. I've got an E-Trade account. I've got a Robinhood account. And it used to be such a pain to manage all of my accounts. I'd hop from platform to platform. I'd always forget my Fidelity password, and then I have to reset my password. I knew that needed to change because I need to keep track of all my stuff. Everything got better once I started using Yahoo Finance, the sponsor of today's episode. You can securely link up all of your investment accounts in Yahoo Finance for one unified view of your wealth. They've got stock analyst ratings. They have independent research. I can customize charts and choose what metrics I want to display for all my stocks so I can make the best decisions. I can even dig into financial statements and balance sheets of the companies that I'm curious about. Whether you're a seasoned investor or looking for that extra guidance, Yahoo Finance gives you all the tools and data you need in one place. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit the brand behind every great investor, yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com. That's yahoofinance.com. Young and Profiters, I've been a full-time entrepreneur for about 4 years now, and I finally cracked the code on hiring. I look for character, attitude, and reliability. But it takes so much time to make sure a candidate has these qualities on top of their core skills in the job description. And that's why I leave it to Indeed to do all the heavy lifting for me. Indeed is the most powerful hiring platform out there, and I can attract, interview, and hire all in one place. With Yap Media growing so fast, I've got so much on my plate, and I'm so grateful that I don't have to go back to the days where I was spending hours on all these other different inefficient job sites, because now I can just use Indeed. They've got everything I need. According to US Indeed data, the moment Indeed sponsors a job, over 80% of employers get candidates whose resumes are a perfect match for the position. One of my favorite things about Indeed is that you only have to pay for applications that meet your requirements. No other job site will give you more mileage out of your money. According to Talent Nest 2019, Indeed delivers 4 times more hires than all other job sites combined. Join the more than 3 million businesses worldwide who count on Indeed to hire their next superstar. Start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/profiting. Offer is good for a limited time. I'm speaking to all you small and medium-sized business owners out there who listen to the show. This is basically free money. You can get a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/profiting. Claim your $75 sponsored job credit now at Indeed.com/profiting. Again, that's Indeed.com/profiting, and support the show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/profiting. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Yeah. What a great explanation. I think you gave so many good gems. So I work in marketing. I have a podcast marketing agency, and a lot of I don't do ClickFunnels for my clients. So like, I don't set that up. I don't claim I'm an expert. I'm not, you know, I'm an expert in organic marketing. Like that's what I'm really good at. Right. And everybody always asks me like that so many people are so misinformed and they don't know where to start. What do you advise people? Like, where do you advise people to start? Like, should they just get ClickFunnels and kind of like do something out the box like that? Like, what is your advice to either companies or people who really want to get their funnels right? Cause I get this question 20 times a week.
Yeah. So, you know, I've seen that, and I've worked with companies that they reach out to us and they say, we've got this college grad from Ivy League school, has a degree in marketing, and they don't know what they're doing. They honestly, you know, the danger in some just being stuck in college academics is that you can go to college and what you learned there is 2 or 3 years outdated and what's working. When it comes to internet marketing, it's really, you have to be studying it every week. you know, like you mentioned, there's new policies coming out that you didn't learn about this in college last year. So you have to be continually learning. You have to have mentors. You have to have groups that you can work with, masterminds that you can always be learning when it comes to internet marketing in particular. Granted, there's probably some professions that, you know, you can learn and, hey, it's good to go for a long period of time. But internet marketing is not one of those things that that's true. You always have to be learning. So there's a lot of great platforms that work for things. The best way to figure out what's working is find that individual that is the best of the best in the industry. Find those funnels, find those websites, find the experts, see what they're doing and model it. Success leaves a trail. You know, we call it in the industry funnel hacking, where basically you find the funnels that are working good, look at what they're doing, and you know, if this individual is making X amount of dollars, they've done a lot of testing, they've done a lot of work, and so you just begin to model that. You don't copy it or, you know, just completely do exactly what they're doing, but you model it. Like, for example, if their headline is over here on this side in this color, put your headline this side, this color. If they're using this color button, use this color button. If they're using this type of video, use that type of video. And so you model what they're doing, because these big companies, they've spent millions of dollars testing and split testing. So the quickest way to get to where they're doing is look at what they're doing and model what they're doing.
That's super, super smart and really practical advice. Thank you so much. Let's switch gears really quickly. Let's talk about side hustles. So you wrote an online book about 27 side hustles. I'm obviously a proponent of side hustles. I grew my business on the side of Disney streaming for 2 years to multi-six figures. So love side hustles. I think everyone should have one, especially if they're a hustler. So why do you love side hustles? And are there any that you highly recommend?
Yeah. So here's the thing, is in September, October of 2019, I always have people come to me like, hey, Paul, will you teach me how to do what you do? Teach me how to do what you do. And I'm like, you got a couple of years. You want to sit down and learn? We can do that. But I realized what they were asking is, can you teach me how to that laptop lifestyle, work from home, make money? And I know when I first got started in internet marketing, is there so many different ideas and people saying, do this, do this. And I tried so many different things and I didn't know, okay, is this real or is this just a scam? And so it was just a difficult road to figure out what to really do. So I put this book together to really show people, this is the stuff that works. What I did is I actually interviewed, I don't know, probably 60, 70 people that were legitimately making money online. Not these get rich quick schemes or anything like that, but people that were legitimately doing things. Like, for example, I interviewed a 17-year-old boy that while he was in high school made over $20,000 in 1 year. Now, $20,000 for the person that is fascinated by the guys driving the Lamborghinis and everything like that, $20,000 a year doesn't sound too glamorous, but $20,000 a year to the average person will change their life. So, especially if it's a side hustle, this is somebody that is doing this in school. So I interviewed him and said, hey, you know, what are you doing making $20,000 a year, 17 years old in high school? Obviously, if he could do it, the stay-at-home mom could do it. The guy that is working 40 hours a week that's got, you know, 5-10 hours extra a week that he can put into it, they can do it. So again, that's what I wanted to learn in interviewing these people. So I interviewed a lot of people that were doing things. Some were making $10,000, $20,000 extra a year. Some people were making a significant amount of money doing this. A lot of times what happens about a side hustle is a side hustle, if you get good at it, can be turned into a full-time hustle. So when someone just starts to learn how to make the first $100 online, they can replicate that. So that's what I did, is I interviewed a lot of people, you know, that were doing cool things and compiled it, put it into a book, made some videos and everything like that, and just trying to give people a blueprint. Here's some cool things that are working. Try them out. It doesn't have to be too complicated. I mean, it's, you do have to work. I think that's sometimes the misconception is people want to like just click a button and money starts printing. There's no work involved. And, you know, don't we wish we could all do that? I do believe in passive incomes, but there's no income that doesn't demand some work, whether it's in the
at
front.
At least up front, and, yeah.
Yeah, you know, you have to do some work initially somehow. So I'll give you a few of the ideas that I saw. I'm like, man, this is amazing. So the 17-year-old boy that I interviewed, this is what he was doing, is he put an ad on Craigslist saying, do you have an old cell phone that you want to get rid of? I will buy it from you for cash. And people would respond to it, and he would buy their phone. And he knew based on this model, you know, the shape, the condition of it and everything like that, that it was worth, let's say, $100, where he would buy it from this person for $50 and then place it on Facebook Marketplace, eBay, something like that for the going rate of $100. So it's just basically a quick arbitrage. He would buy it from someone for $50, knew the value was $100, and there he's made $50 himself. So you do that a few times a week, a few different cell phones, then you've made yourself $20,000 a year. Not a whole lot of work involved, not very complicated to do, but it's real money. It's real money. So I've seen that. I've seen individuals that will go to thrift stores and find something at a thrift store that, like, for example, books. There's an entire world of, they call them book flippers. And it's really amazing. They will go to thrift stores, libraries that are getting away old books and stuff, and they will buy the books. And you know, some of these stores, you can buy a book for 50 cents. And they buy the book for 50 cents, and then they will put it up on Amazon or there's other websites, and they might sell it for $10 or $15. I met individuals and interviewed individuals that bought a book at a garage sale for $2, and it was actually a rare book, and they sold it for thousands of dollars. So it's kind of like treasure hunting, you know, digital treasure hunting, but it's real money. Another one is I interviewed a lady. She had graduated from college, and she was in between things, was wanting to go back and get her master's degree, but she enjoyed traveling. And so what she did is she taught children overseas conversational English. There's websites that you can sign up on. And she told me, she's like, a couple hours a day, I go onto this app and I just have basic conversations with young students wanting to improve their English. And she does that 4 or 5 times a week, and she makes a couple thousand dollars a month doing that. So again, there's real things. There's sites like Upwork where you can, if you've got a skill set, there's sites like Fiverr that, again, when I first got involved in internet marketing, I remember putting gigs up on Fiverr and Upwork and other sites like that, and people would hire me to do that. So if you've got a skill set or you can put in some time, there's a lot of different ways that you can make money online.
Yeah, and that just, it made me think of an idea. So not only arbitraging products, but also services. So there's people who work in India and the Philippines, and they might be good at graphic design. You could be the relationship manager and the broker between the graphic designer, and you find somebody who needs graphic design work, and you can just connect the dots, and you could have no graphic design skills, but you just manage the relationship and take a little profit on top. So it's like, there's so many different ways to like arbitrage on the internet, I think.
Absolutely. I had one of my coaching students, his name's Peterson. He came up to me recently and he was trying to figure out how to do online businesses and stuff. And he's like, I know a lot of people that know they want websites, they need graphic designs, but I don't know how to do that. And so I pointed him to some sites where you can hire graphic designers, website designers. And if you can get the client, you just hire this team and they will do the work and you just figure it out. Okay, they're going to charge me $1,000. I'll charge the client $2,000. And like you said, as a middle person, you're making money there. And so He's done very well in doing that. So yeah, you can be a website designer, a logo designer. You can offer those services just by finding relationships online that will do the work for you.
Totally. Okay, so the last question I ask all my guests is, what is your secret to profiting in life?
Secret to profit? Give. Yeah, it's just give. People before profits. Give to others. Pour into others. Help others. You'll never go wrong. Going back to my degree in theology, there is a universal principle in all religions that you reap what you sow. I mean, whether it's Christianity, whether it's Buddhism, Hinduism, there's a universal principle that if you give and you sow good, you will reap good. And it works. So just give, help others, serve others, and it will come back. Don't put money first, but just put people first, and you'll always be successful.
That's fabulous advice. Thank you so much, Paul. This was such a great conversation. Where can our listeners go to learn more about you and everything that you do?
Oh, thank you very much, Holly. It's been my privilege. So probably one of the easiest places is find me on Instagram. Again, my Instagram handle is Paul. It's just P-A-U-L. Follow me on Instagram. Send me a message. Be more than happy to connect with you. My personal website is paulgetter.com, and you can find out all kinds of information about me there.
Cool. Thank you so much.
Thank you.